everybody. Welcome back to Up to No Good. This is a Harry Potter podcast, and I am your host, Lindsay Taylor Siplin. First up, I want to say that I don't mean to bombard everyone with information as soon as I start the podcast, because I know that it might seem like I'm just, like, getting right into everything, but to be honest, I really don't have that much to say beforehand, because this isn't a super popular podcast yet, but an exciting news. As far as I know, I am the only person named Lindsay Siplin in the country. It's very possible that I'm the only one in the world, but I realized that when I Google myself, this podcast is one of the first things that comes up. So, kind of exposing myself there, but that's interesting, and I just thought that was cool. Also, the day I'm filming this, well, recording this, is the day before Thanksgiving, and by the time anyone hears this, it will most likely be Thanksgiving, because I'm uploading this kind of late, but I want to say Happy Thanksgiving! Thanksgiving is definitely my favorite holiday, because you just get to eat so much food and just hang out, and it's the time where you can watch Christmas movies and no one thinks you're weird for it, but I do that anyway. My favorite one is probably Home Alone. Well, one of my favorites. I think Elf is always going to be my favorite. So yeah, I hope everyone has a good Thanksgiving or whatever holiday or whatever day it is that you're listening to this. I hope that it's a very good day. And without further ado, we're going to get into episode 3 of Up to No Good, covering chapters 5 and 6 of Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. So we left off of chapter 4 with Hagrid visiting Harry, and he tells him he's a wizard and everything, and they go to bed. But it doesn't say anything about when they, like, where they slept, so I'm assuming that they're still at this shack or cabin or whatever that's in the middle of nowhere, and that's because at the end of chapter 4, it just says that Hagrid gave him his coat and said that he could sleep under it, and then the beginning of chapter 5 says that Harry woke up in the morning, and there's no mention of them, like, moving or anything, so I guess they slept in the shack. But I don't know what Vernon and Petunia and Dudley did, because they were, like, pretty terrified and angry the last time we heard from them. But Harry wakes up the next morning, and he's keeping his eyes closed because he thinks that he had a dream last night that a large man named Hagrid came and told him he was going to a school for wizards. But when he opens his eyes, he's going to be back in his cupboard at home. So Harry is doing this when he hears a tapping noise, and he's like, oh, there's Petunia knocking on my cupboard. But he gets up and looks out of the window, and it's actually an owl tapping at the window to come inside. So he opens it, and the owl comes in and drops a newspaper on top of Hagrid, and then goes over to his coat and starts pecking it. And Harry is about to, like, stop it, but Hagrid just tells him to pay it and look in his pockets for it. And Harry goes to Hagrid's coat, but apparently it just has a ton of pockets in it. And when I read this, I was thinking of the show Shake It Up. And I watched it when I was younger, and there was a character named Deuce. And whenever you needed something, he would just open his coat, and he would just have a ton of stuff in there. He would, like, have tickets to stuff. He might have snacks. I don't know. But I imagine that's just how Hagrid was, because it says his coat was almost like it was made of nothing but pockets. Like, he had tons of keys and balls of string and tea bags in it. So I just thought that was, like, a funny connection that my head made. And eventually, Harry is, like, going through all these pockets, and he finds a handful of strange-looking coins. And Hagrid says to give the owl 5 nuts. And it's spelled K-N-U-T-S, so I'm going to pronounce it nuts, but I know some people say knuts, but I don't think that sounds as good. So, yeah, if you don't like that, too bad. I'm going to say nuts. Anyway, Harry puts the nuts in a little pouch that is tied to the owl's leg, and it leaves. So Hagrid gets up and says that they need to go to London to buy Harry's school stuff. And Harry's a bit confused because he, like, says he doesn't have any money, and Uncle Vernon said last night that he wasn't paying for any of his schooling. So Hagrid told Harry that his parents left him money, and Harry doesn't believe it because he, like, doesn't think that there was anything left for him because they, like, because he's been told his whole life that his, like, parents were, like, deadbeats, basically. and Hagrid tells him that all of his money is in Gringotts. And Harry's surprised that wizards have banks and says that. And Hagrid says, no, there's only one bank, Gringotts, and it's run by goblins. So once again, Harry is like super surprised because he didn't know that goblins were a thing. And Hagrid says that you'd be mad to try to rob Gringotts, and you should never mess with goblins. And Hagrid also says that Gringotts is the safest place in the world for anything, except maybe Hogwarts. And he says that he also has to go to Gringotts anyway for Dumbledore, and Dumbledore often has him do important things like getting Harry or getting things from Gringotts, because he knows that he can trust Hagrid. And when Hagrid says that Dumbledore knows he can trust him, I immediately started thinking of something I was reading somewhat recently, and it said that there are at least three kinds of trust you can have, like, with a person, or in a person, I should say. And the first one is that you trust their judgment. You know that they're going to, like, make a logical decision with the information that they have, so it'll be, like, it'll make the most sense overall. And the second one is that you trust a person's competence. You know that they, like, are going to, like, use the skills that they have to get a job done well. And the last one is that it's the trust that I think Dumbledore has for Hagrid, and it's that you trust a person's intentions. I totally believe that Dumbledore knows that Hagrid's heart is in the right place, even if he might kind of fumble the bag along the way. So we also will, like, eventually come to find out in the book that Hagrid isn't the best at keeping secrets, and he kind of stumbles a little bit and says things that he shouldn't say, or reveals things that he shouldn't say to Harry, or, like, gives him information that a child just doesn't need to have yet. And next we learn that they did stay at the shack overnight, because it says that the boat Uncle Vernon had hired to take them there was still there. So Harry and Hagrid have to be at the shack if they're leaving the shack right now. And they get in the boat and everything, and Hagrid asks Harry if he won't tell anyone that he uses magic to speed up the boat. And Harry is excited to see more magic, so he says that he won't tell anyone. So Hagrid pulls out his pink umbrella again and taps it twice on the side of the boat, and they speed off toward land. But my question is, how does Hagrid do this silently? Because it just says that he tapped his wand, not his wand, it says he tapped his umbrella. I think we'll find out later that his, like, wand pieces are actually in the umbrella, that's what I can remember. But how does he do this silently? Because later on in the series, they practice doing silent incantations, like, when they're in, like, 6th or 5th year, but Hagrid's doing this, and he left school at the age of 13, and he couldn't even turn Dudley into a pig properly last night. So that seems like advanced magic for someone that is, like, magically illiterate. Anyway, I really don't know what to say to that. I guess that's kind of like a plot hole, but maybe there's an explanation for it that I'm not thinking of yet. But Harry asks why anyone would be mad to try to rob Gringotts when they're on the boat, and Hagrid says that there are spells and enchantments and dragons guarding Gringotts. And Gringotts has hundreds of miles of, like, stuff under London, so you would die of hunger while trying to get out, even if you were able to break in and steal something from one of the vaults. So Harry's kind of just left to think about all of this while Hagrid sits back in the boat and reads his newspaper. But Harry wants to ask a ton of questions, but he's been conditioned by Uncle Vernon not to talk to someone when they're reading the newspaper. And Hagrid continues to read his newspaper and says that the Ministry of Magic is messing things up as usual. And Harry can't help himself and asks that there's a Ministry of Magic, and Hagrid says, of course there is. And they wanted Dumbledore to be the minister, but he wouldn't leave Hogwarts, so Cornelius Fudge got the job. And we learn that Cornelius Fudge sends Dumbledore a bunch of owls every morning asking for advice on what he should do. So Harry asks what the Ministry of Magic actually does, and Hagrid tells Harry that their main job is to make sure that muggles don't find out that wizards and witches are living among them, because everyone would want magical solutions to their problems, and magical people just, like, want to be left alone. They're walking through town, and people are looking at Hagrid as they walk by because he's so huge, and Harry kind of has to jog just to keep up with him. And this reminded me of when I was little, and this would happen to me when we were in grocery stores, my mom and I, because she was like the size of a normal person and I was like 4, so I had shorter legs and I would have to kind of jog just to keep up with her and the cart. And another thing that this reminded me of was another grocery store story from when I was younger. I, like, didn't know that different races existed. I thought people were just, like, different colors. I didn't know that there were, like, categories that we put people into. And I would sometimes not keep up with my mom because I liked looking around. So I might stop for a bit. And then by the time I'd look around, I wouldn't immediately see her. So I would just, like, look for a light-skinned person that was, like, tall and skinny and had brown hair. So there were quite a few times where I would just end up walking up to a white woman, and then she would turn around and I would be like, oh, no, that's not my mom. And my mom told me that she knew this would happen sometimes, and she thought it was funny because oftentimes she would literally be in the same aisle. I was just, like, unobservant sometimes and wouldn't see her, and I would just walk up to the nearest person basically. And that I used to not like it at all, but it's actually hilarious now. I imagine it was very funny to watch. And apparently people were also looking at Hagrid because he would just point out very ordinary things like parking meters and tell Harry and be like, wow, the things muggles dream up. So Harry asks Hagrid if he said that there are dragons in Gringotts, and Hagrid says that that's what everyone says, and that he would really like a dragon. So Harry's like, you want a dragon? And Hagrid says that he's wanted one ever since he was a kid. So I'm just gonna make a little pit stop right here, because I think it's funny that there have already been, like, 2 instances of foreshadowing in these past few, like, paragraphs. The first one was when Hagrid says that a person would be mad to try to rob Gringotts, which I know later in this book, someone does try to rob Gringotts. And also later in the series, Harry robs Gringotts. And that's basically going against one of the first things that he learns about Gringotts. And the second thing is that Hagrid always wanted to own a dragon. And we will actually see Hagrid own a dragon later on in this book. And eventually they get to the station, but Hagrid doesn't know how to pay with muggle money, so he lets Harry deal with it and then just buys the tickets. And Hagrid tells Harry that there should be a supply list in the letter that he got yesterday. And somehow Harry just, like, managed to overlook this last night. I don't know about y'all, but if I found out that I was a wizard last night and was given a letter that my family had been trying to keep for me for, like, more than a week at this point, I would look all over that envelope. I would look on the back, the front, the inside, the outside, everywhere. But I guess this is just showing Harry being a little bit daft and kind of unobservant. Not even kind of, painfully unobservant. So he pulls out a piece of paper, and it has all the supplies that he needs to get, which is basically just, like, standard stuff like uniforms, textbook, and other equipment that he'll need. And it also says that he can bring an owl, a cat, or a toad, and that first years cannot have brooms. And I just want to point out that the uniform says that they will need a plain black pointed hat for day wear, and I wish that they were seen wearing their hats more often in the movies, because I think that it's in the first movie a little bit. I kind of remember seeing Hermione wearing a witch's hat, but this is the only time that I can remember that. But anyway, Harry reads the whole list, and he asks if they can buy all of that stuff in London, and Hagrid says you can if you know where to go. But Harry had never been to London, and he thought that it seemed like Hagrid knew where he was going, but he just wasn't there, like, he wasn't used to getting there in a normal way. So they're walking through London when they get off the train, and Harry thinks it's completely normal, like, they're just walking through the city, and he doesn't see anything that seems, like, magical or anything. Until they get to a pub that's called the Leaky Cauldron, and Hagrid says that it's famous, but apparently Harry wouldn't have noticed it if Hagrid hadn't pointed it out. So I don't know if it's like a thing where, like, you don't know if you've never been there before or something, or if it's just another instance of Harry being unobservant. But yeah, they see the leaky cauldron, and Harry's like standing outside, and he notices that when other people walk by, their eyes go from the shop next to it to the shop on the other side. So he wonders if people like can even see it. He's wondering if muggles have the ability to see it, I should say. So he can't ask this because they go inside too quickly, and it's dark and pretty shabby inside. People are just sitting all around, and the barman sees Hagrid walk in and asks if he wants his usual. So this is just another mention of Hagrid and his what I think is excessive drinking. Apparently he goes there often enough to have a usual, and everyone in there seems to know him because they all wave and say hi and everything. But Hagrid declines the drink and says that he's on Hogwarts business and, like, pats Harry on the shoulder. And when the barman looks at Harry, he, like, immediately comes around from the bar and shakes his hand. And that causes everyone to get up from their chairs and crowd around Harry. And one of the people that's mentioned by name is Dedalus Diggle. And Harry says that he bowed to him in the shop once before. And Dedalus is so excited that Harry remembers him. So I actually don't remember how Dedalus Diggle is relevant to the series at all, but like I think his name comes up later on, like maybe in the 6th or 7th books. So if he like turns out to be relevant, I don't remember how or why, but I called it. Narrator also says that there's a person named Doris Crockford that just keeps coming back around and to shake Harry's hand, and this kind of reminds me of once when I was younger, I went to like this big mall that's in Cleveland, and there was a person in the food court like handing out little samples of Chinese food. So I walked through the food court once, and then I wasn't even trying to do anything, and I just like ended up walking back in the same direction, and the person offered me more, so I took it, and then I was like, ooh, I really like this, so I literally just walked past again to get more. And I feel like that's what this person is doing, because they just like want to shake Harry's hand so bad. And next, at one point, a pale young man comes up to Harry, and he seems really nervous, and we find out that his name is Professor Quirrell, and Hagrid says that he's going to be one of Harry's teachers at Hogwarts. But Professor Quirrell is like very clearly nervous, and he stutters a lot in all of his lines, but he says that he is the teacher of Defense Against the Dark Arts. So at this point, I know a lot of people like kind of point out a plot hole that it's because Hagrid says that Professor Quirrell is going to be one of Harry's teachers at Hogwarts, and they're asking how Hagrid would know this. But because I think they're taking it to mean that Quirrell has been the Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher for the past year. And I guess this is possible, but isn't the Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher, like, isn't that position cursed so that they can never keep one? But I am taking it to mean that it's possible that the summer before term starts, he was hired, so Hagrid would know that he is going to be the teacher. Or it's also possible that Quirrell was teaching a different subject at Hogwarts, and now he's just changing, kind of like what happens with Snape when he was teaching potions, and then in the 6th book, he ends up teaching Defense Against the Dark Arts. So either way, it's possible. I don't really know which one happens. But apparently, it took almost 10 minutes of just shaking people's hands and then beating him and looking at his scar until they can get out of the leaky cauldron. And Hagrid is like, I told you, you're famous. Even Professor Quirrell was trembling to meet you, even though he's trembling most of the time. And Hagrid says that apparently this is because Quirrell met some vampires in the Black Forest a couple years ago, and he just hasn't been the same. So they walk up to this wall in the leaky cauldron. It's like a brick wall, and Hagrid taps some specific bricks with the point of his umbrella, and they move and open up an archway, and Harry and Hagrid step through, and he's amazed. So Harry looks back, and he sees the archway closing back into a solid wall. So Harry's looking around, absolutely amazed. It's like he's a kid in a candy store. So Hagrid says that they have to go to Gringotts first to get his money and the stuff for Dumbledore so that they can go buy the stuff. and they're walking by the shops, and Harry sees a Nimbus 2000, which is apparently the fastest broomstick on the market. They're walking, and they come upon Gringotts, and they walk in a first set of doors, and Harry sees a goblin for the very first time, and it's wearing a scarlet and gold uniform, and the goblin is about a head shorter than Harry and has a long beard and long fingers and feet. And then they walk through a second pair of doors. Well, they like come up to a second pair of doors, I guess, because they haven't gone through it yet. And there's like words engraved on it, and it says, "Enter stranger, but take heed of what awaits the sin of greed. For those who take but do not earn must pay most dearly in their turn. So if you seek beneath our floors a treasure that was never yours, thief, you have been warned. Beware the finding of more than treasure there." So that's pretty ominous. Yeah, very suspicious. And I like it, though. It's pretty cool. I like the rhyme scheme, A-B-A-B. Good thing I learned that in, like, 8th grade. Anyway, they go up to, like, a goblin bank teller, I guess he would be, and Hagrid says that they need to get Harry's money from his, like, safe. And he has to, like, go through all of his pockets and empty them out onto this goblin's book of numbers. And the goblin is not amused by this at all, but I feel like that would be, like, really funny. And he's, like, emptying out all of his pockets until he finally finds Harry's key. And he also gives the goblin a letter from Professor Dumbledore. And it says that it involves you-know-what in Vault 713. So they follow Griphook out of the main part of Gringotts. And Harry asks Hagrid what's the you-know-what in Vault 713. But Hagrid kinda won't tell him. He says that it's super secret Hogwarts business, and that Dumbledore has trusted him with it, so he can't tell Harry anything about it. And they go through a door, but Harry thinks it's gonna be, like, the marble, like, pretty, like the other part of Gringotts, but there are, like, railroad tracks and a small cart, and it takes them down through passages that Harry tries to remember which way it's going, but he just can't because it's going so fast. He also, like, notices that the cart must know how to get to various vaults because Griphook is not steering, and at one point he sees a burst of fire and looks back to see if it was a dragon, but they had already, like, moved so far that he just couldn't see, and so he just doesn't know. And while they're riding, Harry just goes, "I never know, what's the difference between a stalagmite and a stalactite?" And Hagrid does not like this ride, and he thinks he's going to be sick, and says, "Stalagmite's gotten imminent, and don't ask me any questions now. I think I'm gonna be sick." So they get to Harry's vault, and Griphook unlocks it, and Harry gasps at how much money's in there. There are silver coins, gold coins, and bronze nuts. And Harry says that, well, like, he doesn't say it. He thinks that the Dursleys must not know that he has a small fortune under London because they would have taken all of his money. So Hagrid helps put some of the money in a bag, and he says the gold coins are galleons, and there are 17 silver sickles to a galleon, and 29 nuts to a sickle. And that makes absolutely no sense to me. I've never understood how, like, the wizarding money system works, and I imagine that that is what it's like for every non-American when they see Americans try to do conversions, because I know, like, every country but the USA pretty much uses the metric system, but we don't because Americans like to be different and difficult. But next, they go to Vault 713, and it doesn't have a keyhole like Harry's vault. And Griphook just takes a finger and, like, strokes the door, and it melts away. Then he says that if anyone but a Gringotts goblin tried to do that, they would be sucked through the door and trapped inside. So Harry is, like, kind of, like, freaked out by this and asks how often they check to see if someone is stuck inside, and Griphook says about once every 10 years with a nasty grin. So Harry's expecting that the vault's gonna look like his, and it's gonna have, like, even more stuff, and it's gonna have jewels and stuff, but it doesn't. It's literally just a little grubby package wrapped in brown paper, and it's sitting on the floor. So they leave. Hagrid gets it, and they leave Gringotts and go to Madame Malkin's robes for all occasions. But Harry goes in by himself because Hagrid says that he has to go get a pick-me-up in the Leaky Cauldron. So that is another reference for Hagrid's drinking. I don't even know how many it's been, but it's only been, like, what, 4 full chapters, and it's already been mentioned a ton. So Harry goes into Madame Mulkin's by himself, and she asks if he's going to Hogwarts, but before he can answer, she has him stand on a stool next to another boy with a pointed face. And we'll learn that this is one of my favorite characters, Draco Malfoy. And at first, Draco is actually pretty nice to Harry, and he says hello and asks if he's going to Hogwarts too. So Harry says yes. And Draco says that his father is next door buying books, and his mother is up the street looking at wands. And the narrator says that Draco has a drawling voice. And immediately after, I thought it was funny, because I was like, oh, Draco's not that bad. And then I turn the page, and he just starts sucking so much. And he says that he's going to make his parents go look at racing brooms next, and he thinks it's stupid that first years can't have their own brooms, but he's going to bully his father into getting him one and smuggling it into Hogwarts somehow. So, immediately, Harry is reminded of Dudley. So, Draco asks if Harry has his own broom, and Harry says no, and then Draco asks if he plays Quidditch, and Harry says no again, and then Draco's just talking about, oh, I do. My father says it's a crime if I'm not playing on my house team. And then Draco asks Harry if he knows what house he'll be in. And Harry just kind of feels kind of stupid right here because he's not really contributing to the conversation other than saying no. So then Draco starts talking about how he'll definitely be in Slytherin because his whole family has been in Slytherin. And says that he would leave Hogwarts if he was in Hufflepuff. So Harry's just not enjoying this conversation. And Draco sees Hagrid outside of the window. And it's like, whoa, look at that guy. So Harry kind of stands up for Hagrid and it's nice. And he says, that's Hagrid. And Draco's like, oh, I've heard of him. He's a servant, isn't he? So Harry says that Hagrid is the gameskeeper at Hogwarts, and basically Harry's just decided he likes Draco less and less as this conversation goes on. And Draco goes, oh, I've heard of him. He's a savage who lives in a hut on the school grounds, and every now and then he gets drunk and tries to do magic and ends up setting fire to his bed. So I have a couple notes for Draco says here. First of all, this is another mention that Hagrid is drunk or drinking, and just why is Hagrid the only person that drinks alcohol in this story so far? And two, I also feel like this is kind of true. It's possibly true because I feel like if Hagrid were drunk, he might be more reckless than usual and end up doing something like that. So I feel like there might be a little bit of truth to what he's saying. So, and then after Harry hears this, he just says that he thinks Hagrid is brilliant, and that's so nice. And Draco asks why he's here with them and asks where Harry's parents are. So Harry says that his parents are dead, and Draco responds, oh, sorry, but the narrator says that he doesn't sound sorry at all, and Draco asks if they were, quote, our kind. And Harry's like, well, they were a witch and a wizard, if that's what you mean. So then, I'm so sad. Draco just starts sucking even more. And he's talking about he doesn't think the other sort should be allowed in Hogwarts because they haven't been brought up to know how wizards live. And Draco asks what Harry's surname is, but before Harry has to answer, Madame Mulkin says that Draco's finished being fitted, and Harry is so happy to get out of this conversation. So they continue to get Harry's supplies when he leaves the shops, and he asks Hagrid what Quidditch is. And Hagrid kind of makes him feel worse by saying that he forgets how little Harry knows about, the magical stuff. And Harry tells him about the Pale Boy and Madame Malkins and what he said about wizards who come from Muggle families. So Hagrid reminds Harry that he's not from a Muggle family, but I don't really think that was, the entirely right thing to say. I feel like that's kind of like when you're in a conversation, if two white people were in a conversation and one of them is being racist and Harry told Hagrid about it, then he's just like, well, at least you're not black. That's not the main issue. But Yeah, Hagrid just says that he doesn't come from a Muggle family, and that if the kid knew who Harry was, he wouldn't have said anything of like that. And Hagrid also says that some of the best witches and wizards come from a long line of Muggles, like Harry's mother, because she was Muggle-born. And Hagrid explains that Quidditch is the magic people's sport, and it's kind of like football to Muggles. And then he, like, explains what Slytherin and Hufflepuff are, because they're schoolhouses. And he says that everyone says that Hufflepuff are a lot of duffers. I don't know what a duffer is, but it doesn't sound like a compliment. So if a British person wants to tell me exactly, like, what's the American equivalent of calling someone a duffer, please let me know. And Hagrid says that, yeah, he explains everything, and Harry says that he bet he's in Hufflepuff, but Hagrid says that it's better to be in Hufflepuff than in Slytherin, because there's not a single witch or wizard that went bad that wasn't in Slytherin, and he says that You-Know-Who was a Slytherin. So Harry's surprised to hear that You-Know-Who went to Hogwarts, and Hagrid says that he was there years and years ago. So next, they go to a shop called Flourish and Blotts to get Harry's textbooks. And Harry's very infatuated by a book that's not on his list. It's called Curses and Counter Curses, Bewitch Your Friends and Befall Your Enemies with the Latest Revenges. So Harry is trying to figure out how to curse Dudley, and Hagrid says that he isn't allowed to do magic in the Muggle world except for, like, very special circumstances. So we assume, like, if you're in danger or something, you can use magic, but other than that, you can't. And he also wouldn't know enough magic to be able to use the curses yet, so it would be kind of useless for Harry. It also says that the book is written by Professor Vindictus Viridian, and we know that there's only one wizarding school in this part of Europe, so that means that this person is probably a professor at Hogwarts. So this professor is just making money off of students buying a book of curses that they're probably gonna bring to Hogwarts and cause trouble with. I don't really get that, but I guess get your coin, Vindictus. And apparently Hagrid also wouldn't let Harry buy a solid gold cauldron, because his list said that he needed a pewter one. And they get other supplies for Harry, and he says that he'll get Harry an owl as a birthday present. So they go to, like, the owl store, and Harry gets a snowy owl, and she was asleep in her cage when they walk out. And that just sounds so cute. I used to really like owls. I don't know, but they're still pretty cool, so if I had an owl, that would be so cool. And they go to Ollivander's, which is the last place they need to go for Harry's supplies, and he has to get a wand. So they walk in, and Mr. Ollivander says that he was expecting to see Harry soon, and says that he has his mother's eyes. And apparently this guy has the best memory ever, because he says that he remembers Lily Potter's wand, and says that it was 10 1/4 inches long, made of swishy willow, and good for charm work. Then he says that James Potter's wand was a mahogany wood and 11 inches in pliable and had a little more power, and it was good for transfiguration. And he also says that it's not the wizard who chooses the wand, like, you don't just, like, get to pick out one. Whichever wand, like, works the best for you is the one you get. So basically the wand chooses the wizard. And Mr. Ollivander, like, touches Harry's lightning scar on his forehead and says that he is sorry to say that he sold the wand that did that to Harry. And he says that it was 13 1/2 inches long, made of yew, and it was very powerful. And it got into the wrong hands, basically. And then he sees Hagrid sitting in the back of the shop and is excited to see him and asks if Hagrid's wand was snapped when Hagrid was expelled from Hogwarts, and he confirms that it was, but says that he still has the pieces. And I just want to know why Hagrid was allowed to keep the pieces from his wand, because this pretty much confirms that he's doing magic because he put one of the pieces in the umbrella. Like, we can put that together. And so why would he be allowed to do this? Why would they just be like, snap it in half and then just give him the pieces? It seems like they would just throw it away or recycle it. I don't know how it works, but seems like you shouldn't give it back to someone that you expel from school. Anyway, Mr. Ollivander confirms that he's like, "You're not using it, are you, Hagrid?" And Hagrid says no, but tightens his grip on his pink umbrella when he says it. So Mr. Ollivander still seems suspicious of whether or not Hagrid's lying, but he just like gives up and starts taking Harry's measurements and says that every Ollivander wand has a core that is of a powerful magic substance. And they use unicorn hairs, phoenix tail feathers, and heartstrings of dragons. And no two Ollivander wands are the same, and that's why you won't get as good results if you try to use someone else's wand, because that wand did not pick you. And apparently, like, Harry just suddenly realizes that the tape measure is measuring by itself, because Ollivander is, like, across the shop, looking through shelves and taking down boxes. And, like, how did Harry not notice this when Ollivander first walked away? What was he looking at? It just irritates me a little bit how unobservant Harry has the potential to be. So Ollivander makes Harry try out a ton of different wands until he finds one that makes pretty sparks when he like swishes it, and it's perfect for him. So Mr. Ollivander says that he remembers every single wand that's ever been sold, and he says that Harry's wand has a phoenix feather inside of it, and the phoenix only gave one other feather, and it was put into another one of Ollivander's wands, and it turned out to be you-know-who's wand. So this is a bit suspicious to Harry, but like they don't really go into any more detail, and we learned that he pays 7 galleons for his wand. I don't know like what the dollar equivalent is, but that sounds pretty cheap in comparison to like other stuff that we've heard him pay for. I can't remember anything off the top of my head, but I don't know. It seems like this is like the main magical like component, so why is it so cheap? And yeah, they leave and they get hamburgers before Harry has to get on a train home. And Harry seems a bit discouraged by all of this because he's just a bit stressed out because people are expecting him to do great things, but he can't even remember what he's famous for. And he tells Hagrid this, but Hagrid says that he'll learn everything fast enough and everyone has to start at the beginning. So that's kind of encouraging. And he says that Harry only feels this way because he's been singled out in such a way that no one else has. Because Harry is having, he should have the experience of every other person that comes from a Muggle family, but he doesn't because of what happened to him as a baby. And Hagrid helps Harry onto his train that's going to take him back to the Dursleys. And he says to get on the train on September 1st at King's Cross Station, and that all of the information is on his ticket. And he gives him his ticket, and he says to send his new owl if Harry has any issues with the Dursleys, and that the owl will know how to find Hagrid. And that is the end of chapter 5. And really quickly, I thought this chapter was like really interesting, not gonna lie. I didn't remember much of like when Harry first goes to Diagon Alley, so it's pretty cool to it's pretty cool to read this again. So before we get into chapter 6, we're going to have a word from our sponsor. Welcome back for chapter 6 of Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, the journey from platform 9 3/4. So we left off of chapter 5 with Hagrid putting Harry on his train back to the Dursleys, and we are beginning chapter 6 with Harry back at the Dursleys, and he's been there for a month. And it's just, like, not great for him, but also not terrible because they've just, like, been ignoring him and pretty much pretending that he doesn't exist. Basically, no one talks to him, and they don't make him do anything or yell at him, which is an improvement, but in some ways, he finds it kind of depressing just to be constantly ignored in your own home. We also learned that Dudley is kind of scared of Harry now, and he runs away anytime Harry speaks. And he mostly stays in his room now and just talks to his owl, and he named her Hedwig, and he found the name in his History of Magic book. So it turns out Harry just like basically stays in his room all day, and then he like reads his textbooks all night because they're super interesting, because he's like super excited to be a wizard and stuff, and that's just like wholesome. So it turns out that the day before September 1st, Harry asks Uncle Vernon to drive him to King's Cross Station in London, And Vernon grunts, and Harry takes that as a yes and says, okay, thanks. Then he tries to make a stupid joke about how it's weird that wizards are using a train to get to wizard school, or do the magic carpets have punctures in them or something? So Harry doesn't even respond to this. And then Vernon asks where the school is, and Harry says that he doesn't know. He's just supposed to take the train from platform 9 3/4 at 11 o'clock. So Uncle Vernon and Aunt Petunia look at each other like they're crazy, and he says that there is no platform 9 3/4, but Harry says that that is what his ticket says. So the Dursleys are kind of trying to rub it in, and Vernon says that he'll take him to King's Cross only because he's going to London tomorrow to get Dudley's tail removed because he's going to Smeltings, and that he just wants to make Harry look stupid when he sees that there's no platform 9 3/4. And apparently Dudley has had this tail for about a month at this point, and I know Dudley absolutely sucks, but that has got to be deeply traumatizing for a little boy to have a pig's tail put on him by a wizard, and he was just bullied for literally no reason. He's just had to have this tail for a month. Like, that's literally cruel. I don't know what to say to that other than that's cruel and kind of horrifying. I don't know how I would react to having to have a tail for a month given to me by a wizard that I didn't know existed 5 minutes before it happened. Anyway, Harry gets up at 5 o'clock the next morning, and he was, like, too excited to go back to sleep. I kind of feel like he's, like, a kid on Christmas, because he gets to leave the Dursleys and go to magic school. I feel like that's, like, every kid's dream to go to magic school, especially if you have a sucky household. But he doesn't want to wear his robes, like, to go to the station, because he thinks he'll look out of place, so he puts on jeans, and Aunt Petunia basically has to, like, talk Dudley into sitting next to Harry in the back seat, and they get to King's Cross at 10:30, and Uncle Vernon is acting strangely kind, and puts Harry's trunk on a trolley for him, and wheels it into the station for him with a grin on his face when they get to platforms 9 and 10. And then Uncle Vernon kind of makes Harry feel even more stupid because he's like, oh, well, here you are. Looks like they haven't built your platform yet. So, yeah. And then he just literally leaves Harry there and drives off. And it says that all three of the Dursleys were laughing in the car as they, like, look at Harry and drive away because he's just standing there all alone between two platforms. And that's so cool. They're literally leaving an 11-year-old boy with all of his belongings at the train station. Someone needs to call CPS. What's the British equivalent of CPS? I know Harry has to stay with them, but, like, I just feel so bad for him. But Harry's getting funny looks because he's just kind of standing around, and he has an owl. So that's not a very common thing to see. And he, like, goes up to a guard and tries to get help, but he's too scared to mention platform 9 3/4 because apparently no one's heard of it. And he tries to, like, beat around the bush, but the guard is getting annoyed with him, and he thinks he's trying to be stupid on purpose. And he's like, well, what about the train that's leaving at 11 o'clock? But the guard says that there wasn't one leaving, and he ends up walking away and mumbling about time wasters. So at this point, Harry is trying not to panic, and he's thinking that Hagrid must have forgotten to tell him how to get to the platform, like maybe he had to do something like at the Leaky Cauldron by tapping the bricks with his wand. But he's just standing there and watching people pass by and looking around when he hears someone say something about muggles. So he looks around and there's a plump woman with four boys and a little girl, and they're all redheads and they're pushing trunks, and one of them has an owl. So Harry moves his stuff over so that he can watch them, and the mother says, oh, what's the platform number? And I know that this is so that we can hear her confirm that they're getting to platform 9 3/4, but how on earth did she forget the platform number? It's not like it's just a normal number. It's the only one that's, like, in between platforms. It's not even like, oh, platform 9. No, it's 9 3/4. And we know that this is Molly Weasley, obviously, and she has a ton of kids. So, at this point, she's had, like, two sons graduate from Hogwarts, and she has boys that are still there. So that means she's visiting the platform every single year for what? I don't even know how long, because, like, there were 7 years for Bill and Charlie, and I don't know, like, how much overlap there was for Percy. But anyway, it's been, like, more than 10 years that she's going there every single September 1st. So how is she just like, what's the platform number? So I know that it's like kind of inconclusive. Well, inconclusive, it's kind of irrelevant. But yeah, that just kind of bothered me a little bit. So I guess that's just for exposition. But she has Jenny holding her hand, and the mom tells Percy to go first, and Harry is watching carefully so he doesn't miss anything, but a crowd of people walk between where Harry is standing and where the Weasleys are, so by the time the people, like, disperse, Percy had already vanished, so Harry still doesn't know what to do. And then Fred and George go through, but he just sees them walk toward a barrier, and then they vanish. So Harry says, "Excuse me," to Mrs. Dursley, and she asks if he is a first year at Hogwarts, so he says yes, but he doesn't know how to get onto the platform. So Mrs. Weasley just says that you have to run straight at the ticket booth and don't be scared or you'll run into it. So he does that, and he's expecting that he's going to crash into the wall and get in trouble, but he doesn't, and he ends up going through the wall, and then he is on platform 9 3/4. And he goes up to the Hogwarts Express, and it is a red steam engine, and finds an empty compartment and puts Hagrid in it. But then he, like, can't lift his trunk up the stairs because he's 11 and weak, which I can relate to. So Fred and George Weasley help him, and then they realize who he is, and they're like, "You're Harry Potter." And Harry's like, "Oh, him? Yeah, I am." And then Mrs. Weasley calls all of her kids back, and they make fun of Ron because Mrs. Weasley wipes something from his nose and is, like, trying to, like, clean him on the platform. And we also learn that apparently Percy has been bragging all about how he's a prefect this year. And the twins kind of go in on him with their jokes. And they're like, "Oh, Percy, you're a prefect. You should have said something." And then the other twin says, "Oh, I think he might have mentioned something about that. Maybe, like, once or twice a minute all summer." So, yeah. Percy's already started sucking. I never really liked Percy that much, but I guess I'll deal with him. He hasn't done anything offensive yet. Anyway, we also meet Ron, and the book it says that he is almost as tall as the twins already, and I always forget how tall Ron is supposed to be, because in the movies, Rupert Grint isn't as tall as the twins, so I just, like, associate the actors as the characters, and I forget that. And we also learn a little bit more about Jenny Weasley. She's begging to go meet Harry Potter because the twins say that they met him on the train. But Molly Weasley is so precious, and she says that Harry isn't something to goggle at, like, you're at the zoo. And she forbids the twins from asking anything about you-know-who or the day or his past or anything, because Harry doesn't need to be thinking about that on his first day of school. So yeah, top-notch parenting from Mama Weasley. She has literally only said, like, a few words to Harry, and she's already a better parent than the Dursleys have ever been to him. So everyone gets back on the train, and Ginny starts to cry because she can't go to Hogwarts yet, and all of her siblings are gone at this point because Ron is a first year and they're only a year apart. So she's going to be living at home by herself with her parents. That kind of happened to me because my siblings are a lot older than I am. There's a 6-year gap, which is that's the smallest gap between my next oldest sibling and I. So I've basically been living as an only child since, like, the 7th or 8th grade, so I know how Jenny feels. And Ron comes into Harry's compartment and asks if he can sit there because everywhere else is full, so Harry says that's cool. And the twins come back into the compartment. It says that Lee Jordan has a giant tarantula, and they properly introduce themselves to Harry as Fred and George, and they say that Ron is their little brother, and then they leave. So Ron can't help himself, and he asks if Harry actually has the scar, and Harry, like, moves his bangs and shows him, and he says that he, like, can't remember anything from that night. And Harry asks Ron if his whole family is wizards, and Ron says that yes, and his mom has a second cousin that's an accountant, but they don't talk about him, and I just thought that was funny. I'm just imagining this poor guy that turned out to be a squib, and he just, like, is an accountant, and no one talks to him anymore because of it. So that's kind of sad for the cousin, but it's really funny. And Ron asks what it was like to live with Muggles, and Harry says that it was horrible, not because all Muggles are bad, it's just that his aunt and uncle and cousin are terrible. So Ron reveals that he has 5 brothers, but 2 of them have already graduated. Their names are Bill and Charlie Weasley. Bill was the head boy at Hogwarts at one point, and Charlie was the captain of the Quidditch team. And Percy is a prefect, and Fred and George mess around a lot, but they're still, like, really good at school, and they're funny, and pretty much everyone likes them. So Ron seems a bit stressed out because of this, because everyone expects him to do as well as the others and thrive at Hogwarts. And if he does, it's not a big deal because all of his, like, siblings have done it before he did. So he says that he also never gets anything new because of how many kids his family has. And he got Bill's old robes and Charlie's old wand and Percy's old rat named Scabbers. And he begins to say that he couldn't afford an owl. Then he stops himself halfway through and just says that he got Scabbers instead. So Harry tells Ron about how he didn't have any money up until a month ago, and how he didn't know he was a wizard or anything about his parents. And Ron is shocked but impressed because Harry says he says Voldemort's name, like, while he's talking about his experience and stuff. But Harry just says that he's not being brave or anything. It's just that he's never known not to say his name. He's never known not to say Voldemort's name. And Ron kind of comforts Harry and says that he won't be the worst in the class because tons of people come from Muggle families and they fit right in at Hogwarts really quickly. And eventually a lady comes around with a trolley and it has all sorts of, like, snacks from the wizarding world. And Harry's never seen any of this, so he buys a little bit of everything and ends up paying 11 silver sickles and 7 bronze nuts. I don't know how much this would be in, like, actual money still. And Ron doesn't buy anything because he doesn't have any money, so he takes out some sandwiches that his mom packed for him. And Harry offers to switch with Ron for a sandwich for a pasty. And Ron says that he wouldn't want them because the sandwich isn't very good and it's dry because his mom is busy trying to have, like, 5 kids at once. But Harry doesn't care and he's just happy to share something and to have someone to share it with. So this is really cute because they're just gonna be best friends, and it's so adorable because they, like, never had anyone their own age and they can relate to each other. So they just, like, continue eating, and Harry comes across a chocolate frog, and Ron explains that there's a card in it of a famous witch or wizard, and that people collect them, like Ron collects them, and he says that Harry should start collecting them too. And the very first one that Harry gets is of Albus Dumbledore, and there's a picture of him and, like, a little, like, synopsis of everything that Dumbledore's done. So Dumbledore's card says, "Albus Dumbledore, currently headmaster of Hogwarts and considered by many the greatest wizard of modern times. Professor Dumbledore is particularly famous for his defeat of the dark wizard Grindelwald in 1945, for the discovery of the 12 uses of dragon's blood, and his work on alchemy with his partner Nicholas Flamel. Professor Dumbledore enjoys chamber music and tenpin bowling." So then Harry, like, turns his card back around to see if the picture of Dumbledore again, and apparently it has left. And Ron says you can't expect him to hang around all day. He'll be back. So Ron also gives Harry the card from his chocolate frog because there's a person named Morgana on it, and Ron has 6 of her apparently. So they keep going through chocolate frogs, and Ron's just helping collect various people, and he ends up with a ton. And then they get into the Bertie Bott's beans, and Ron explains that some of them taste good, but other ones taste bad. Eventually, a round-faced boy that Harry passed on the platform comes into their compartment and asks if they have seen a toad because he's lost him. So Ron says that if he brought a toad to Hogwarts, he would try to lose it as quickly as possible, but he brought Scabbers, so he really can't say much. And Ron also said that he tried to turn Scabbers yellow yesterday, but it didn't work. And another girl comes into their apartment with the boy who lost his toad, and she has a bossy voice and lots of bushy brown hair and large front teeth. And she sees that Ron is about to do magic and asks to see it. He says some silly words that, like, should be an incantation, but it just goes, "Sunshine, daisies, butter, mellow, turn the stupid fat rat yellow." And obviously that does not work because that's not how spells in the Harry Potter verse work. That sounds like more of a spell that would work in Wizards of Waverly Place, but yeah, it just doesn't work for Ron. So the girl is kind of like bragging, and we'll learn that this is Hermione Granger eventually, but she says that she's tried a few simple spells for practice at home and they all work for her. And she's like, are you sure it's a real spell? And she also says that no one in her family is magic at all, so they were surprised when she got her letter. And she says that she has learned all of her textbooks by heart already and hopes that it's enough. And we learned that her name is Hermione Granger. I love Hermione so much. So the boy who lost his rat is Neville Longbottom, and he is a bit stunned when Hermione says this because he hasn't learned his books by heart yet either. So, like, the boys are just looking at each other, and they're all comforted by this because they all know that they don't know their books by heart. And the four of them, like, introduce themselves to each other, and Hermione says that she's read all about Harry Potter because he's in some books that she got for background research. And he's surprised to find this out. And Hermione says that she hopes she's a Gryffindor because it just sounds like the best Hogwarts house, but Ravenclaw wouldn't be bad either. Apparently Dumbledore was a Gryffindor. And then she says that she and Neville are going to go look for his toad some more and says that Harry and Ron should change into their robes because they'll be getting to the school soon. So Hermione and Neville leave, and Ron says that whatever house he's in, he hopes Hermione isn't in it. And that's just so cute because we know that they're going to end up married. And I like did not, I haven't read these books in what, 4 years at this point, at least 4 years. So like, I kind of stopped shipping Ron and Hermione, but as I'm like reading about their characters again, instead of only watching the movies, I'm seeing how like perfect they are for each other, kind of, even though this is literally their first interaction. I just think this is so cute. But anyway, Ron asks how Ron's older brothers are doing and what they're doing now that they left Hogwarts. So he says that Charlie is in Romania studying dragons, and Bill is in Africa doing something for Gringotts. And he also says that apparently Gringotts recently had some sort of break-in, and someone tried to steal something, and it probably has something to do with you-know-who. Ron also asks Harry what his Quidditch team is, but Harry says he doesn't know anything about Quidditch or, like, which teams to support. So Ron explains Quidditch and how the balls work and the positions and everything. And then the door opens again, and Harry and Ron expect that it's Hermione and Neville, but it's actually the pale dude from Madame Malkin's shop and two other dudes, and he asks if it's true that Harry Potter is in this compartment, and Harry says yes. And then he introduces himself as Draco Malfoy, and Crabbe and Goyle are, like, his goons, and Ron, like, laughs. So Draco immediately goes in on Ron and says, do you think my name is funny? My father told me all Weasleys have red hair, freckles, and more children than they could afford. And that's kind of, like, cruel to say that to, like, an 11-year-old. This is literally an 11-year-old kid already bullying another 11-year-old for being poor and having red hair. So, like, it sucks, but, like, the way he says it is kind of savage. It's kind of just like, ooh, that was terrible. Dang, that was terrible. But, like, you shouldn't say that, but, like, I like Draco so much. He's one of my favorite characters. So Draco turns to Harry and says, you'll soon find out some wizarding families are much better than others. Potter, you don't want to go making friends with the wrong sort. I can help you there. And he holds out his hand for Harry to shake, but Harry doesn't take it and says that he can tell the wrong sort for himself, which makes Draco go a bit pink. And Draco says that he would be careful if he were Harry, or he might become like his parents because they didn't know what was good for them either. And he also says that if you hang around with riffraff like Weasleys and Hagrid, it'll rub onto you. So Harry, being the messy B-word that he is immediately ready to throw hands. I imagine he's, like, just popping off his press-on nails. And it's just like, if you don't leave my compartment now, I'm going to hit you. And I'm going to start a fight. So Goyle starts to reach toward their chocolate frogs that are next to Ron. And before Ron can do anything, Goyle starts yelling because Scabbers bit him. So, yeah, shout out to Scabbers for being a bit of a G and saving the chocolate frogs. Even though we find out that Scabbers is a traitor and a nasty, nasty B-word later on in the series. Right now, this is a pretty G move right here. So, this makes, like, Crab, like, fling around, and he accidentally, like, well, I don't know if it's an accident, but he ends up hitting Scabbers, and Scabbers, like, falls, and Malfoy and, Goyle end up, like, backing away, and they all just leave. So, then Hermione comes back in and asks what's going on, because there was a lot of commotion. So, Ron says that he thinks Scabbers has been knocked out because he got hit, and then, Harry tells them about how he met Malfoy in Diagon Alley, and Ron says that he's heard of Malfoy's family because they were some of the first to come back to the good side after You-Know-Who disappeared, and they said that they had been bewitched, but Ron's father does not believe that. So Hermione, being the bossy queen that she is, says that they need to change and stop getting into fights because they'll be in trouble before they even get to Hogwarts. So Ron's like, we weren't the ones fighting. Scabbers was fighting. And he says that Hermione should leave while they change. So Hermione says that she will leave, but there are people outside behaving very childishly and racing up and down the corridors. So she also tells Ron that he has a bit of dirt on his nose. And she's like, did you know that? So Ron is upset by this, and he's glaring at her as she leaves, and Harry and Ron put on their robes, and there's a voice that they can hear down the train that says they will be getting to Hogwarts in 5 minutes, but to leave their luggage on the train because it will be taken to the school separately. So they get off the train, and Harry hears a familiar voice calling for the first years, and he looks around and sees that it's Hagrid. So all of the first years follow Hagrid down this steep, narrow paths, and nobody's, like, speaking much because they're all mesmerized and trying to take in as much as they can. And then they go around a bend and are able to see how cool Hogwarts looks, and they're all just, like, oohing and aahing. So they get to a black lake, and Hagrid says that there shouldn't be any more than 4 people in a boat. So Harry and Ron get their own boat with Hermione and Neville. And Hagrid just, like, calls all the boats and they move, like, in sync with him, and no one has to, like, row or anything. And they all get off the boat, and Hagrid asks if someone lost their toad. So Neville comes up and says that it's Trevor, and I think that's a really cool name for a toad. Just, I like giving animals, like, painfully, like, normal names, so Trevor's pretty cool. I know a couple Trevors. They're all cool, I guess. And they walk up to the stone steps, and Hagrid makes sure that everyone's there and everyone has their pets. And that is the end of Chapter 6 of Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, The Journey from Platform 9 3/4. I'm not gonna lie, I'm, like, getting more excited as I get more chapters in, because, like, all of this before this was kind of, like, solely exposition, and right here is, like, the beginning where we're finally getting to, like, see how magic works and stuff, and we're getting more into the magical world. And also, just, like, to end this podcast, I thought I'd start a podcast for fun, but I really didn't realize how much work it is. But I, like, genuinely like how much I like doing this, even though I'm, like, very busy. This is very cool for me, because even though it takes a while to prep, like, I have about 15 pages of notes just for this episode, and that took me about 3 hours to do, and then that's not even recording, like, the time I take to actually, like, record myself speaking and talking about everything. But I'm really enjoying this so far, so I hope that everyone else is enjoying it too. And I think that this is a really interesting medium, because I've, like, made some YouTube videos, and I did enjoy that, but they were all, like, silly and stuff, and it takes so much work for YouTube because it's a very visual platform. But for this, for me to make a podcast, like, I can literally, it's so flexible, because I'm literally just sitting in my bed next to my Dunkin' Donuts donut holes, and my hair is in a scarf. I don't have to get ready or anything. I just get my stuff ready, and I just start speaking. So I'm really enjoying this, and I hope that everyone else is enjoying this too. And I just think it's really interesting that I can create, like, quality content without having a visual aspect connected to it. So, yeah, this is the end of this podcast, and thank you for listening. You can also, like, find me online anywhere, pretty much, if you just search Lindsay Siplin, but I'm on Instagram at Lindsay Siplin, L-I-N-D-S-E-Y. I'm on YouTube, Lindsay Taylor. I should come up if you search that. So yeah, let me know your thoughts, leave a review. I don't know how to view the reviews yet, but if you do, it like really helps like the algorithm, like so I will be boosted, and when more people search for Harry Potter podcasts, I will come up. Seriously though, I hope everyone enjoyed this episode of Up to No Good, and if you did, please literally just like give it a review on Apple Podcasts, because that really helps with the algorithm, and you don't even have to like say anything, you can just like click the 5-star button. And if you did enjoy this, literally just share it with one person you think would also enjoy it, because the best way to help a podcast grow is by word of mouth. So thank you for listening, and I hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving or whatever day you're listening to this. Bye.